Next one here says review of protective covenant revisions.
Yep. Okay, we've started through this document once before, a couple times, and we are on page, the bottom of page 4, on the hunting provision, paragraph 8. Okay, I've, since in the last while as I've been thinking of working on the bylaws, I've had a change in my thinking on this particular language and on some of the other stuff in here. I'm wondering if the approach we take shouldn't be to say, okay, let's keep the covenants and the bylaws as simple as possible, and sort of, and so that they create the structure, but leave for the rules and regulations, which can be modified a little more readily by the board, more of the detail stuff. So, for example, on the hunting thing, I'm wondering if this needs to be in there at all at this point, or if that's something that should really be spelled out in the rules and regulations, not even the bylaws. Put it in the rules and regulations.
Along that line, Larry, there's one other comment. What we're dealing with here, and we're spending lots and lots of time on it, is a regurgitation of a regurgitation of a regurgitation. The blue book and the pink book have lots of negative, wrong stuff in it, and we took that and started marking stuff off. I'm not sure when we get through with what we've got here that's even complete, because all we've been doing is kind of marking off and eliminating and simplifying. I like this idea that you said these two documents should be fairly simple because they are hard to change, and then go to rules for the day-to-day kind of, yeah, of things. And so whether we're still trying to resurrect or put a piece together the bylaws and these, and I wondered, and I kind of hesitate to make this recommendation. I talked to there's a attorney firm in St. George who say they specialize in these kind of things, and if for a few hundred dollars they could do a generic A to Z, you know, all the way through, a consistent thing like they would do for any new company, and print out, and I didn't ask what they would charge, but if they had in their computer program a model set of bylaws and a model set of CCNRs, if we wanted to ask them to print that out in a simple form or something. So I think we're spending lots of time. When we get through, I'm not smart enough to know whether we've covered all the different things or whether we have omitted something so that it does not have the consistency as was involved. Well, I just throw that out because, you know, this says Clarkson's committee. Wasn't at all. My committee is Phil Hall's, same committee. So we got down to a week or two before the meeting, and that fell apart. So there's two different things. But for a year, they'd worked side by side, they'd worked together, and in trying to simplify and correct the initial proposal.
I don't know if my question would be: is are we unique enough? Are we similar enough to just a boilerplate? Can we take a generic form of CCNRs and deed restrictions or whatever, protective covenants, and then make our specific things in rules and regulations for, I mean, I don't know enough about any of them at all. To
one reason to make that suggestion, Larry, was we've organized four or five limited liability companies, and they were with different attorneys, and they were on different companies, and they're almost word for word. They came off of a computer printout, and then, yeah, each company, I think, would have to say, hey, I want to change this a little bit, but the basic things that you need to address are in their computer banks to print out. Now, whether we get one to print it out, you know, with practically no charge, I don't know that.
But I think, and I agree with you to a degree, but we've gone through this, and it seems like everyone wants to do with a fine-tooth comb. It's something we have. Are there any basic modifications we need, or does this look good? I don't feel like I need to pay someone else something that is fine, has been working, but if there are major issues versus, you know, I don't like that word there and this doesn't apply, you're going to have to go through something that you've given them this anyway because they're very specific to us. I believe we are specific enough, Larry, that instead of nitpicking it, and I agree with you, just have some basic stuff or eliminate so that it's understandable, basic premise of jurisdictions, ranch associations, and then in your rules and regulations be more specific in those areas. But I can't see another firm going through and doing another one, and it's like, well, this one doesn't apply to us, and this one doesn't, or this one doesn't. I think there's been a lot of progress made. I believe that there was too much, this word isn't right, and I don't like this, and I don't like that. So that's my personal opinion. I mean, we can, if we want, get through this and eliminate, but it seems like every time we turn around, even if we could do a couple pages, but something else comes up and then something else comes up. And it's just what your priorities are. Do you want this prepared, ready, one set of documents? Do you want both of them tried to be done by the next annual meeting? Do we hold on to it again? I mean, just thought too, because there should be a way. It's just wording a lot of these, but it functioned for us for all these years. We were just trying to update.
Yeah, we're trying to take a 2-page document and make a 25-page document out of it. So this has not served us at all.
Well. That's where you go to your rules and regulations and do those simple pages. And as you said, you go to all these different people and they all have different ideas, and that's what's been happening to us anyway. This one and this one and this one and this one. And large amounts of money have already been paid out.
Very applicable, of course. We were not a very simple set of bylaws and policies, okay? We had it being bigger than what we have here. We used a generic form like that and threw it one by one. The biggest issue was that because it was a credit union, maybe it was different than what we were looking at. We paid about $11,000 for the we had to do it because mostly because the issues with our employees were, you know, much more complicated than we were doing. Now, I think we could get a quote on how much one of these generic packages would take. It'd be worth looking at because we changed very little since we got here. Okay? And it was very, very helpful for us to bring things up to date and bring them up to code. It's like you say, if it's something for a few $100, it's not a good bargain.
I may be wrong.
Yes.
I was thinking in terms of $500.
Yeah, and we won't know unless we ask.
Versus the $6,000 to $7,000 we already.
That was wasted.
Was very helpful.
Totally wasted.
It wasn't necessarily shorter. Okay.
Oh.
But it was a boilerplate, and we went through it item by item with the board, and we tested almost everything with very few changes.
Okay, well, do we want to pursue that, or do we want to spend time, I mean, if we're going to do that?
I terrible bad that we've all, you know, spent all the time and all the money. But if we've got a ladder against the wrong building, it doesn't help you any.
Even if the paint is the right color.
Huh? Yeah. You said we got down to what paragraph?
We're on page 4 of paragraph 8. And this is an 18-page document. So we still have another 12 or 14 pages to go.
It's the degree of you looking at it as well, and how much you, I don't like that word, and I don't like that word, and explain this. I mean, it's your level of what you want to accept.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you had someone else write one up that's generic, you have to go through it and understand this one enough to know that you're covered in the angles that you want to be covered. And this is just one of the documents. What about thinking about this? Spend some time. They get it done. We have the other document. Can that be the other document presented to them and have something generic and work through that one? So that one is done. This one's done. If we actually spend some time and realize what we all want together, finish this one, have the other one done. Or are you talking about $500 per one? You see what I'm saying?
No.
See, that's what I'm just saying. We haven't even touched the other one.
I want to compliment Larry Walters. It's obvious the hours that he spent. But again, I would imagine that I've reread the stuff, so there's lots of time gone into this thing.
And Ken has said, they had the generic one. It really wasn't much longer or shorter than the original one they had. So it was inclusive. If we as the board can go through it, I'm just thinking that way. I don't want to have to look at the other one, and it's not done yet either.
Yeah.
But finish it up. If there's a possibility that the other one can be done, I don't know.
Well,
I just want it done.
I just have to make some suggestions on where we are and move on through it. It'll take a few minutes.
That was mine. You guys talk too. I'm tired. I have a headache. I'm hungry.
Well, I think that's part of the issue. I think we're all hungry and tired, and you know, we still have at least a gravel pit to resolve today. And
if you don't spend, but we didn't meet last month either.
That's right.
So we're just trying to pull together.
And it is now June, and we have
nothing done.
To send this out in August. And frankly, I think the likelihood that we're going to be able to continue the process that we've been doing and have something to send out in August is not great.
And at the level at which it's been nitpicked, I can completely agree.
So my suggestion is if we're going to continue this process, then we just acknowledge the fact it's not going to be this year. It's going to be next year that we send it out. And if you want to try and send out something this year, then we've got to do something different. We either need to meet more or we need to have a different document that we're working from.
3-day weekend conference is difficult.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, once you give it to these people, if they'd be willing to do it, we may not have it done by August anyway, because we're talking about two different forms. I don't have a problem. It's summertime.
You've got
but
lots of time, right? You've got the whole summer off. You have nothing to do all summer.
Oh, don't
off.
Say that. No, I got stuff to do.
That's what I get hit with all the time.
I think my question was whether, if it's something that is reasonable and they can, in an hour, cut off a set of bylaws, cut off a set of deed restrictions, and that it's the rules that are unique to the ranch. And that's something that the board can discuss and vote on in of itself.
Well, there are some things that are going to be, if not unique, at least relatively specialized with regard to the ranch. I mean, the issues that we have talked through in terms of defining membership, defining the violation stuff should be fairly standard, but talking about easements and dwellings and those kinds of things, I think those could be different for us than they are for most organizations like ours. But maybe not. This is certainly not the only association of its type in the state of Utah, and and so we may be able to draw from others.
And the thing was, too, when we first went through the entire packet, I wrote down good, got a look at it, okay, same. There was an awful lot, even though there's 20-some-odd pages. We already went through it and kind of came to some general consensus that, yeah, that was fine. I'm just saying if you look at it and say, I accept it, it's good, we're in agreement, we like it, we'll present it to the membership. I mean, because that's what we had done. We had gone through a lot of those. There were just a few of them that were bones of contention. And in the beginning, a lot of that's been resolved.
Well, I've done the same thing. You know,
uh-huh.
Number 8 is okay. However you want to write it up.
8 and 9 were okay.
Okay.
We had gone through these things.
9 is okay. 10 is okay. There's not a 9 now, I guess.
Yeah, there is a 9.
8 and a 10.
Violation penalty.
I was thinking over that one side. I just have number 8. I don't have a 9.
Mine's together.
Oh,
5.
It's on that same line. So we got 8s and 9s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why you have them numbered differently.
Because they were numbered differently in the documents that I was given.
Oh, in the...
Your document versus Phil's, they had different insertions in different places.
Right. So the Huntington Beach, keep in there.
What number is it?
8. That's number 8.
Page 4.
Page 4.
Next page.
8?
No, next page. 4 page. Well, look at these bottom numbers. Right here, the hunting. See, you said okay. We had okay.
Okay, that's fine. Violation
so,
penalty, number 9 was okay.
So we do the, what we're saying okay is then, is on the proposed?
That's right. We'll put this forward to the membership. Number 10 had to do with improvements. All improvements to the property described here shall conform to the zoning ordinance of Kane County, as well as applicable amendments to this protected area.
What page are you on now?
Page 6, item 10.
Okay. Did we pass over page 5?
Well, I thought we had...
That was 8 and 9.
Violation.
That's 8 and 9.
Yeah. I didn't intend to pass it. I mean, that language was pretty much the same in all the documents.
Number 10, the only thing I put down here, no Schedule A. We were talking about that, but everything else was good.
Yeah, I pulled that out because there is no Schedule A on this revision. It didn't seem to make any sense to... Because
to refer to something that doesn't...
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that was... So therefore, in other words, it was good, though, without that...
Yeah. The division of the property, the language doesn't change. Now, on the easements, this may be an issue of some discussion because the language that I have added says that other than utility easements, no easement over association common property may be granted to any public or private entity or individual without approval by a 2/3 majority vote of the membership at a regular or special membership meeting.
So in other words, if you're suggesting an easement for a certain amount of land in lot 1,
but that's
for the well,
never happened.
That's a utility easement.
Yes.
So that would be allowed.
That would be allowed.
Because of the utility easement.
It says other than utility easement.
Okay.
The problem I have 75% with
vote versus 2/3
examples of acres had to come to the board and request an easement across a corner of association ground to get to their lot put in a driveway. If this is the way it's worded, then we've got to go to the membership and get a 2/3 vote to allow them to do that.
Yeah, you know. It may not count, but I have a big fat no circle on that red paragraph mark.
For number 12?
12?
Yeah, for the easement stuff.
And I collect
okay, well,
2/3,
I mean,
well, 75%.
I know the concern here for most is that the board or a select group may approve Meadow Canyon Road.
Exactly.
And that, I don't know how to distinguish different levels, you know.
We can put that in.
Your road on your lower lot actually came across the BLM ground, but had that been association ground,
it would be nice for you to be able to come to the board and say, I'd like to access my lower valley and build a cabin site or whatever. I don't think that needs to go to the whole ranch-wide membership and get a two-thirds vote.
Can we do this? There's a lot of them that are good. We have to talk about that one. Can we put a hold on number 12?
Okay.
And then just keep going, and then we'll know which ones we have to address.
Okay.
See that it's not really an elephant we're trying to eat.
He is.
White chamber.
15, okay. I said okay.
I said good, dwelling, okay. Good, okay, yeah.
14 was rules and regulations. And it says, in the event there is a conflict between the rules, regulations, and these protective covenants or the association bylaws, the bylaws and the protective covenants shall control. The board shall have the authority to amend, change, add to, and restate the rules and regulations. 1, to aid it in administering the affairs of the association. 2, to ensure the properties are maintained, etc. Regulate the common use areas, establish penalties and fines. These protective covenants, the changes to the rules and regulations shall be submitted to the membership for comment for 45 days prior to implementation, and any provision of the rules and regulations may be overturned by a majority vote of the membership at any regular special meeting. The issue here was, okay, you're going to create these rules. Does the board have the authority to just impose them on the membership? Does it require a vote of the membership for the rules? I don't think that's workable, but I do think the membership should have the opportunity to talk to comment on them before they're implemented, so that if somebody sees that they're going to be harmed in some way, that can be brought to the attention of the board. And then if the membership, and we may choose to go ahead and do it anyway, but then if the membership says that they don't like a particular rule, they should have the authority, the capacity to veto it or to overturn it after the fact at a membership meeting. But that shouldn't. I don't think that every rule has to be approved by the membership every time. I think we should be able to go ahead and put a rule in place, and then, but there has to be some provision for the membership
to recall it.
To recall it, to comment on it, so that if they know something we don't, that can be brought to our attention before it's implemented. If the membership doesn't like it, they should be able to recall it or overturn it. And that was the intent of my language in here.
I think that makes sense.
I think that's good.
But
with one, there's one other thing.
Okay.
Where are we as far as the relationship between now and the existing rules? I believe the existing rules are written wrong, have wrong information in them, and that they should not be respected, that needs to be written, and perhaps that a beginning point may need to be approved by the membership.
The initial document of the rules, right?
Maybe that needs to be, or a statement here simply saying that this will affect, or that the rules and regulations are attached to this document.
I don't see that there's anything in this language that would prevent us from doing exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. Revising the rules and saying, okay, this is a wholesale revision of the rules, consistent with the new covenants, consistent with the new bylaws. We feel comfortable as a board presenting this to the membership for their discussion and approval in advance.
Well, the first statement in Phil Hall's, I could never approve these as long as that statement is in there.
It automatically adopts the old rules
and regulations.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I agree that I don't agree with that. Because we need to review that as well. So that's not inclusive in his third column, though.
No, it's not.
So in that sense, I can accept the way he has it written. Okay. 15. Wait a minute.
Are you okay with the way the column 3... list it now.
I'd like to reread this again.
If that's what you want.
Okay.
I have no.
If it doesn't do that, then there's a problem in the language, because that was my intent.
Yeah.
Is to say we can put the rules in place, but the members should have a chance to comment on them and should have the ability to overturn them if they really want.
I think it's wrong that the board adopts some goofy rules and thinks that they're infallible. And that they're cast in concrete, because they should not be cast in concrete. Okay. going on.
Okay, so we'll, you read that, we'll come back to that one to make sure you're comfortable with it. 15 is the accountability of the members. Each member shall be liable to the association for any damage to the common area, improvements thereon, or another member's lot, sustained by reason of the negligence or willful misconduct of said member, their family, invitees, and guests, both minor and adult. That was a much shorter version of some of the other
bills.
But,
and then
why was that put in?
Just because if somebody comes up and drives their ATV unit across your lot and tears up your sprinkler system or does damage, that you should be able to go back to those members and have them be accountable for the damages that they cause.
Well, this doesn't give permission to do that.
No.
And it doesn't give legal basis to do that.
To do what?
It makes them accountable.
It doesn't even make them accountable. All it, what that situation already exists. If somebody tears up my, do I call the cops or do I call a lawyer?
Or do you call Candy? This says you're supposed to call Candy
and
have
board.
Her to. I preferred the one next door on accountability. I say that's best. It deals with the association and their responsible for it. It's limited to what may happen on members private. And this is what the cities do. The cities on CCNR say, hey, we do not enforce civil fights between two neighbors. We just don't get involved. And yet this is saying that we as an association,
if something criminal happens, Kenland comes over and starts chopping down trees on my lot, I have recourse against them already legally. I'm not going to go to the board. There's nothing you're going to go do to Ken because he chopped down my trees.
Okay, so if we took out the phrase "or another member's lot," would you be okay with the rest of that?
But why is it in there? The accountability. Because we put it in our bylaws or CCNRs does not make anybody accountable.
Well, it does if they assign this. If they buy a lot and this is in the CCRs, then they are liable.
Oh, they were already liable before they signed that.
Yeah, it would.
See what Larry just said was a somewhat example.
It's a police organization.
Read that, the one that I had in there, because it does wave a red flag. That each member shall be liable to the association for any damage to common areas and improvements thereon. This organization is responsible in those areas,
right,
and they have responsibility to take action.
The only thing I like about what had been included a specific road that was put in by someone else that has damaged another person's lot. That's what happened to Ed Belinsky. If it indeed it is being taken care of now, but that's a negligence in terms of not checking with another neighbor. I like that, and I like the fact that it includes not just the member and who owns the land, but their family, invitees, and guests.
I think that doesn't this document say that in another place or two?
I hope not. I hope it's not redundant.
I from what we've gone through before, I don't see where it specifically. And if we have more and more people coming out here, the BYU group or this group over here, understanding their invitees and guests. I mean,
each member is liable, and I don't think we go much beyond what is your aunt's uncle's or cousin's. I think the member, we have a legal tie through the deed to the members. We don't have to some of these other people. So I think the member is the one that...
The members are the ones that's responsible.
But you don't think it should be spelled out then?
This is basically saying the member is accountable
for the people that
they... Whether, you know... Furthermore, you're accountable also. Not your family is accountable or your invitees are accountable or your guests are accountable. You're accountable
through them.
For
the other people through you as the member.
So if you have...
Do you want to...
if you have the family reunion out here, you're responsible for all the people in the family
each
reunion.
Member,
well, you think it's great, it's redundant, we don't need to have it in there.
Invitees, yes, and minor.
Yeah, I would do that.
Do what?
Yeah, each member is liable for anyone using the ranch, common land, through their, you know, through their membership.
Yes, okay. Sir. Is there any question about if we bring a guest and the guest damages something that belongs to the association, that we're not liable without the rule in place? Is there any question
maybe not to you or to me? I mean, because you're mm-hmm. a responsible person, and if I have my brother and sister knock them out here and they break something, then I'm going to beat it out of them. But
that's because of who you are.
There's a lot of people who I dealt with this a lot in the school where, you know, obviously back in the day when you were on a team, there was a code. You know, you couldn't play football at Knapp High School if you drank or you smoked or you stole. Now, you can do all three of those things if you haven't signed a little code of conduct that said you would. They can go do that, and the school can't kick them off the team unless they've got a piece of paper that they signed the paper to do it. Which, that's stupid. That's our society, but that's where we got it. If I haven't signed my name on this paper saying specifically I won't do this, and if I do this, you can do something to me, then I can go ahead and do it and say, tell me specifically that I couldn't.
I think that also stands as a reminder to the membership that they are responsible for what their invitees do up here. Because there's no sense in the ranch being responsible for what their invitees do up here. But people got to realize this fact that we're all part of an organization where we've got to basically take care of our own part of it.
Okay, so where are we? Do we...
I think we're in agreement on the intent. The question is the language.
Yes. I think Hall's is too much. I don't know if, Dale, what you've written there is inclusive enough to cover it.
One of the challenges one of the difficulties I have with Dale's language, which I like its simplicity,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't put any limits on the liability of members either. It says you're liable. And I agree that there should be liability if there's negligence or willful misconduct. But if you aren't negligent and it wasn't willful misconduct, are you still liable?
If I back over your sprinkler system and I wasn't willful, I wasn't gunning the engine, I didn't spin out the tires and so forth, I just didn't see it, I'm like, oh, golly, Larry, I'm sorry, look, I ruined that. Of course I'm liable.
But I would call that negligence. Okay.
Or accident. But I'm still liable, even though it was an accident. I'm sorry, and it was an accident.
So we put up some signs last year.
Excuse me.
These roads are impassable when wet, can be impassable when wet. Then we added to that any member or anyone driving on these roads when wet may be accountable for the damage they do to it. Now, there's a lot of people say, well, what do you do if I'm up in the upper cabins and I have to leave and come home? Well, you should recognize the fact that maybe you're going to be responsible for still any damage you do to that road, no matter what your circumstances are.
Didn't Lee Beller have that,
too?
If you
brought those roads up and they have to be regraded, you should be responsible for that. Okay? And a lot of people say, well, you know, that's not my responsibility because you're supposed to maintain these roads. And whether they're wet or impassable or not, I should be able to drive on them.
Ken, not to be argumentative, but I've tried and suggested those signs come down. I think they're offensive. I think they're non-welcome. And if I make ruts on the county roads between here and town, coming or going, and caught in a rainstorm, fact of life.
This is private land, and that's public land.
Same difference. If any of our people are over in Slide Canyon and get caught in a rainstorm, they're going to
let me tell you my circumstance. We had a member that would come up no matter what the situation was and tear the hell out of the roads that I had to drive on. And I was constantly having to deal with that, okay? Now, there was no sense that he had to come up no matter whether it was raining or snowing or whatever and travel that road. But he did it, okay? And I drove one whole year on roads that were horrible because this guy wouldn't do it. And actually, we had more than our share of grading done over there, okay? But I had to deal with that. And there was no reason why he had to do that. I didn't do that. I mean, I was down here with the same type of process and the same project going on that he had. But I stayed off the roads. And when I drove on them, I took care of the roads. I repaired them, okay?
But he was asked not to do it. There was no restitution in terms of money he paid the ranch to have it redone.
So putting the sign up there solve the situation?
No, but at least gave people warning that
driving in here going to solve that situation?
It might. It might make people more aware of the fact that this is their responsibility.
And it gives us as a board the ability to go back and say, see, it's right here. It's your responsibility. There's no question about it. You did it.
Or your family did
it. Or your family.
Or your invitee did it.
And we can't do anything about it. 20 years, I guess we've... I know, we have never charged somebody to make ruts.
But I don't think that's just
what we're trying to do is we're encouraging people from making ruts. That's the only thing we're trying to do. If the road, I mean, you know what the road's going to be impassable. This is a warning thing. These roads can be impassable, okay? And we know that's true, right? A person going up there and come up there now can't come back and say to us, so you didn't tell me that I was going to get stuck up there. And you're responsible for pulling me out because it's your road. Well, that's the one thing. Another thing is that we let people know that maybe they might have to pay for the damage they do on this road. It doesn't say you will be. It says you may be held accountable. It makes people think about it and think about, well, maybe if I tear this road up, I'm going to have to pay for it. They might think twice about doing that, okay?
I just think I like the way, I like the information on the last one proposed. Due to the fact that it's a little more, has more coverage in what it's saying rather than someone saying, I don't know what you meant by that. You didn't tell me what you meant. And I know if you get too strict with the rules, but I don't feel as though that's too strict in its definition, but it's more inclusive that covers the ranch. And improvements thereon. That's good, but who exactly? And you're going to have people like him that knows. That's my code of ethics. That's how I function. You get another person new, such as, and I'm not talking about anybody else, but like Don Woods going and taking all that gravel. He didn't know. And if you don't know, if you don't tell them what you're talking about for their responsibility for guests, minors, you rent your cabin out to these people, you basically are responsible. And maybe new people aren't quite under that same assumption or have the same ethics and values as you do. And they don't have them anymore. Unfortunately, they don't have them. You don't sign that thing to say that you won't drink, school can't do anything.
So, do we need to come back to this one, or are we prepared to move ahead?
I would say let's... I'd agree to mark off the members' lots. We're dealing with the association. And
okay.
Yeah. We're not the police force, we're members. I would say mark that part off and leave it there.
Joe, can you live with that?
Mm-hmm. I can live with that.
Okay. Do you like it?
All right.
I've got a man waiting for me. I've got to go. You still have a quorum. If you have to take a vote, you can still get a vote. It's 1 o'clock.
We already want to.
Did you work with Mark on the rifle area?
No.
No. You worked with him as what then?
My name is Stuart. Drop.
I want to show you something before you go to the thing. We're talking about two different things.
What about the horses? Did they leave the horses here or not?
Yeah.
Are they out of here? Or
I think they got the pickup. He got it going. He got the truck going.
Okay.
Yeah, they took the horses with them. You can say this is a souvenir, and this could go in the garbage can. Want me to take it?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. That's where it's supposed to go.
Val, before you leave, let me move and suggest that we move to the last item under new business. I have listed both of my lots. My Crown and Provo is costing me more money than I had anticipated, so I need to get some cash out. I have offers pending on both lots.
You have two, and you've got offers on both of them.
Yes, sir. I don't have anything signed up at this point, but it wouldn't surprise me if there is a signed agreement on both by the end of the week. At which point, obviously, when those sell, I'm no longer a member of the association.
Just make sure this is one you sell to as good secretary ability.
That's part of the lot. You buy this lot, you're on the board, and you're in the system. So I'm just sort of, I will continue to serve until my lots are sold, but I'm putting you on notice that I will be resigning probably sooner rather than later, and you'll need to replace me and on the board. So.
I got a letter from Dale, maybe the rest of you did too, asking if things are blooming in sales now. What are you hoping to gain? What do you get?
I listed them at 39.9, and the offers that I have are at 36, and I have countered, and there's a verbal agreement to the counter offer, so it'll be somewhere between 36 and 39.
No improvement?
Uh-huh. Do have a well permit on one of them.
Did I ever say one of these days we're going to see a Deer Springs unit selling for $1 million? And you said, ha, 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 it's coming. Not because.
Yes, can I take that as an offer?
Yeah. It's in the house, but the dollar is also going down, and that's what makes it look like we're gaining. Well, it's good to know.
I had a feeling when I saw that, because I knew you had said you were putting one lot up for sale.
Yeah, and I listed them both, and I got offers on both. So.
Okay, so when we leave today, this document is going to be accepted at whatever level, and it's going to be done. And then we'll have to carry on with the rest of the stuff.
Part of my thinking is I'm just flat out lazy. 99% of the membership have never looked at it and won't ever look at it. Maybe not 99%. 75%. 25% that have a problem or a question or an issue with it, if we create the most perfect document, they're going to still have those same concerns and issues and questions. So whether we take the time to go to a different attorney firm, law firm, to have them give us a boilerplate, or we work through these, or we pass them as best we can and move on, there's still, I would bet, the issues that come up in the future, by doing whatever we do, we're going to change a few of those. The other ones are still going to come up, and we're going to have to deal with them and make our interpretation of what we've got, whether it's worded this way or this way. And that resolve whatever issue comes up that week or that month or that year.
So unfortunately, we're in the process of redoing it, and I can't say we'll just throw it away and accept the old one still.
No.
And what's the old one anymore?
We don't even know what the old one was, because we've
been in
the process. There is one that's recorded in its place. I'd refer to that as the old one, not the new multi-page thing. And it could have been done so simply.
Well, the problem being
that... approached it right.
How many years now have we been in the process or somewhat of a process of revision? And how many different ideas and revisions have been thrown out there? So the membership that knew or ever heard of and looked at the original, the one that's recorded, you know, we've got 20, 25 new members just in the past 6 months. What, did they read that old original recorded copy? I don't know whether they have or haven't.
Well, they were given it. It's part of the closing documents.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to go to 26. I had the last four. We're good. Okay. We're on 15. If we can just do this and get it over with. We keep losing people. And I want to be gone too. So,
yes.
But it's important, and I believe you started something. Something's new, updated. We're almost done.
Okay. The next paragraph that I'm suggesting you consider is 16 on the bottom of page 8, creation of the assessment obligation. The changes in this language have to do with the fact that we do distinguish between multiple different types of assessment. There's the annual one, there's special assessments, there's corrective assessments, and then there's any other amount or assessment levied by the board pursuant to these protective covenants. And the other issue is foreclosure. My view is that given that we've got the World Cup going on, we should have a soccer example in here someplace. When you're a referee and when you're playing in soccer, you've got red cards in your pocket. And I think every referee needs to have a red card that says, you know, if you play the red card, then you're out of the game. And I think whether or not we like to use it or plan to use it, we need to have the authority as a board to foreclose on lots just to make sure that we can get people's attention.
Not to digress, did you mark off the 15?
Yes.
The 15 in column 3 I did because it refers to the damages in the common area,
yeah,
and that did go back to the accountability issue. So,
I marked it off.
Yeah. So.
Now, I had written a mind on this number 16. I said Dale's part good, B, the second part. How is yours that much more different than Dale's, except he's more inclusive? Does it, you include the same 18% past dues, foreclosure on the same lots and assessments are past due for more than 12 months?
Right. The last two paragraphs of the Dale's column are pretty much identical with the last two paragraphs of mine. They're just not lined up right. The language that I took out of that one is each such assessment together with interest costs shall also be and remain the personal obligation of the person who was. So what Dale has done, if I'm reading it correctly, and Dale, you know, you correct me here if I've got it wrong, Dale is saying that the obligation to pay the assessment is a personal obligation, not tied to the property. And my language attempts to say it is an obligation that goes with the property, and we have the right to foreclose on it.
If not paid.
Really the intent of what you were saying?
I have a hard time remembering where we are on the whole thing. The thing I might point out, it used to be that the city would, if somebody moved out with a big utility bill, they would try to make the landowner or the next person coming in to make the city whole. And that's all been outlawed. They can't do that. They've got to deal with Joe Blow, who's in there, who used the power, and they cannot lien the property, or the new person coming in. Kanab City used to do this. That's kind of the same thing as here. Now, we got into this on lot number 7. Lot number 7, when the contractor moved off of it, he didn't pay his dues. When Maurer bought, the board tried to make Maurer pay the back assessments, and they were eventually waived. And I don't remember if there's correspondence on it, but the attorneys told Barbara, whoever, forget it, you're not going to be able to force Maurer to pay.
Well, there's two things here. Either you're saying that the debt or assessment is with the property, Ken quits paying for his property, so we foreclose, and the property is sold. Well, that process should satisfy that debt. It's not that we sell it to you, and then on top of that say, okay, he left $5,000 assessment.
And that money should have been taken out of.
Now we also want the $5,000, whatever the assessment is.
See, if I moved out tomorrow, sold my property, but I hadn't paid my dues this year, there wouldn't have been a lien on it. This is just, you know, but we still need to make the provision so that we can put a lien on that property if I'm going year after year after year and not doing it, so that I can't sell that without
paying.
Passing that on to whoever buys that property, okay? But they buy it with knowing that there's a lien on it, okay? Now, there's a point in between here that we aren't covered. On this one, we aren't covered because of the fact that if the lien hasn't been placed on the property, then there's no way we can charge the next person.
That's correct.
Right. Okay? Then we do lose it. But if we've gone through the process that's involved here, then actually that property can't be sold without the person coming in knowing that this is due on that property.
Okay? Which is the process that we go through now.
Which is the process we're going through right now with several of these people. Now, any of those properties that person walks away, they can't sell that property without the person buying the property paying for that lien. So that's recorded down in the title company, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so there's no way in the world that they can come up and say, well, I didn't know this was owed on this property.
How does the lien work in that situation? Is it mandatory? Say, it's filed with the recorder's office. Say, Ken has a $5,000 assessment. We lien it. He turns around and comes to me and says, buy my lot and my cabin for $50,000. And I say, sure, I'll do it. And I have a title report done or whatever, and I see that there's a lien, but I'm still willing to pay him the $50,000. I buy the lot.
Then you'd assume it.
And I've assumed the lien. What if I just choose not to pay it? Is it forced in the closing?
I thought there was something.
No, I don't think there's anything forced in the closing. I think it's between you and
well, I could buy a property with a lien on it.
You can buy a property.
As long as you recognize your
lien
is secondary to the lien.
That must mean that these are in place there and that we can't go into foreclosure on it until that lien's paid. Because that's what the lien gives us power to do. So you could end up with a lot, if you refuse to pay that lien, you could still end up with the possibility that your lot's going to be foreclosed on.
Right.
Until it's paid.
Until that lien is paid.
So in other words, with the way it's written by you, it is still the obligation of that property, no matter who owns it. Dales is basically saying it's only the person that owns the lot that lien is against and responsible to.
That makes it totally unrecoverable. Uh-huh. That person can come up and say, well, what are you going to do? You're going to take me to court? Yes. So you take me to small claims court for $500 and they say, okay, you owe them $500.
But you can't do anything about it.
But you can't do anything about it. So the guy's still going to come up and say, well, I owe you $500. That's too bad.
Well, I think that it should not be a personal obligation. It is the lien that's put on the lot. I go along with the way it's revised and proposed.
This is to protect the ranch. To all the people, this is really to protect all the members of the association that are paying for this.
Larry, I'm not objecting. I could possibly, be reading this because I think that some peace in. And I have to read this carefully to see what the relationship is. Did we, on ours, we put a 36-month time frame on foreclosing? Or do we foreclose after 12 months? Or do we leave that up to the board to decide place a lien and foreclose the same on lots when assessments are past due for more than 12 months. It doesn't say when to foreclose. On the one that we had a...
I like...
a 36-month
period. That's kind of what we've gone by, isn't it?
I would say let's not put a time frame in here, because if we have a time frame, if it's written down, that's
and you don't
what
do
we
it?
Have to do.
Can't move it forward.
Yeah. If it's not written down, we do have a policy. We've been following a certain pattern of beyond 12 months. When it hits the 24, we file a lien, and if it goes to 36, we foreclose.
Mm-hmm.
But if you define it as foreclosure after 36 months, and if you don't do something...
Well, if you don't do something, I think you lose your credibility. And if you...
Yeah, once you do that... Although there are certain circumstances that maybe the board should have a reasonable ability to
have a little discretion to make that
right.
call.
And then here, the way it's written, when assessments are past due for more than 12 months.
Okay.
So that's...
Why don't you put the board will file the lien and then may start proceedings for foreclosure after that point.
Well, what it says is the board has the authority to
power
the lien and foreclose on lots.
Okay.
And the assessments are
passed. I think
okay.
Conclusive.
So that sounds good. That provides for that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Annual assessment language is exactly the same.
Yep.
Good. Okay. I have
okay.
Three okays on that.
And the delinquent dues are okay?
Mm-hmm. Wait a second. Page 10, that's a continuation.
Right.
I put an, I've got a mark by mine here.
But we're worried about this one here.
I know. This
oh,
is yes. What, so this is what I had marked out here.
Which one?
The page 10. That.
Yeah, those the language in red is what you want.
Yeah, mine's not red. Unpaid memberships will be auctioned on April 15th on the first and second year of delinquency and sold on April 10th of the third year. Did we, if we're being liberal, do we want to have that inclusive?
But this refers to memberships and...
delinquent dues.
Right, but the delinquent dues have to do with memberships.
Oh, okay. So,
then,
so we don't want that in.
That's
well,
why.
We've already
okay.
That
well,
in
then that do we accept the proposed? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
The next block is on special assessments, and that language is identical. So I'm trusting that everybody's okay with that.
I put okay, and then in the margin I put board or members. I don't know.
I put members, same as lot owners. I put something myself. By the big section.
The board shall pass a resolution containing written findings as to the necessity of extraordinary expenses involved.
These are all three the same, though, I think.
That doesn't mean you, you still want to explore that. Is there something you see wrong there?
Well, I evidently, when I read it carefully, I asked the question whether it needs to be passed by the board or by the members. For these extraordinary expenses.
Okay, then, Mary, you want to read that?
Okay, I think what we have to bear in mind is that there's another type of assessment in paragraph 2, which is the next block. This one that's approved by the board is for extraordinary things like, you know, there's a major damage to a cabin or something of that sort. And the intent, as I read it, was to say, okay, there may be some circumstances when the board has to make a special assessment if it's an emergency or if there's...
those greater...
Versus approved by association and members.
And then, but then there are big projects that we may want to undertake, and those do need to be approved by the association rather than just the board.
So
if we decided to take our 10 cabins to 15 cabins, I would say building 5 more cabins is something that should be approved by the association. If we're talking about doing a special assessment because the roof on the garden cabin collapsed and we have to rebuild it in a
that
hurry, then that would be something I would see.
Shouldn't
the
need to have membership approval on something like that.
I would say okay on that.
Yeah. On both of them?
Special assessments.
Okay. The corrective assessment language says, in addition to the annual assessment, these special assessments.
Before we move on,
okay.
Number 2, are votes being... Is there a question on whether proxy votes count or not?
Okay, remember that my logic was to define voting someplace else and say this is what we mean by voting and it's going to work the same way all the way through.
Okay.
So if we have proxy voting approved elsewhere, then proxy voting would apply here.
Okay.
So, rather than have to spell out what we
yep.
mean by voting every time. So. Okay, corrective assessments. In addition to the annual assessment of any special assessments, the association may, after a hearing, levy corrective assessments against a particular owner and his lot to pay the costs directly attributable to or reimbursable by that owner equal to costs incurred by the association for corrective action against the owner. taken under the protective covenants, bylaws, and rules. So this simply says we can go after a particular owner and levy something if they're, you know, we're trying to correct something.
I think it should be okay.
Non-payment of the assessments, that language was consistent among the other two options.
Well, it looks like, going to the next page, so that Clarkson has increased the amount going to the other page, so there must be something more being said there.
Well, I think all I did was reorganize, but I think if you'll read that text, that language actually just appears someplace else. Let's see if I can point to
it. I bet it does, but with the lien, that's what that's talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that they... It did. I tried to be really careful and to make sure that the language, if the language was there, so that they're, I'm highlighting the differences and not highlighting stuff that's the same. So, okay. In the next block, there's a difference of the liens shall continue until the amount secured thereby and all subsequently accruing amounts are fully paid or otherwise satisfied.
On page 12, the middle part that's
right.
Underlined,
right.
You've included that.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's good.
On that one.
See where you have top of 12. Association may, in its discretion, bring an action against, and if you look at the third column, we're basically talking about the same thing here. Association by its discretion may bring an action either against the owner or foreclosure
right.
on lien. So that's where it's included
yes.
there from where it was at the other spot.
Yes. I didn't mess it.
No, 19.
Well, I think at this point the numbering gets a little
confused. So it goes 18 and then...
Okay.
The perfection of the lien and priority.
Number 18 down at the bottom.
About 13?
Just, yeah. From page 13.
So that would be number 19 then, or no?
The bottom of, there goes on with 18.
In fact, there are two 18s there, so.
The discontinuance of common utility. Is that the one?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay.
You have to find the numbers on those then, right?
Yes.
Because 18 another right. page is lien.
Right. Okay, the discontinuance.
It's in that column.
Okay.
One, ever since the beginning of item 21, I have strongly resisted the board being able to tell the person what they could vote in. I think it's a right that they own, that they got what they're saying, and that they, they're voting.
There, 21 somewhere else.
Cannot be, if I don't... If I am paid the taxes on my house, the county can't say, oh, by the way, you can't vote. And I think that the voting right is a right. And over the years, we encourage, if people hadn't paid their dues, we encourage them to go ahead and vote. Maybe we'd learn something as to why they hadn't paid their dues, or welcome their input on the ranch, thought that it would help the ranch, not hurt the ranch, by encouraging every member to, in fact, vote, not give that
complete power to the board for whatever reason, and so that's why I put in here voting rights. The board of directors may not suspend the voting rights of a member.
I feel in terms of if you haven't paid your dues and don't care about it, then your vote should carry nothing. You shouldn't even be voting because you haven't had a stake in what's happening at the ranch. And
that year.
And that's what the voting is.
They bought property. They have a big investment in the ranch. And their vote should, in fact, count, with the exception of the current dues position. And if they have $20,000, $30,000 involved, there are other ways that we can foreclose on their membership, or we can get even with them, if you want to use that term, but not restrict their voting.
Well, I think if you pay your vote, you have if you pay your assessment, sometimes have a legal obligation to the ranch, and you understand what your vote means. If you don't pay anything, you can give your vote to anybody and have them do whatever they want to do with it. I think a vote and your assessment need to go hand in hand.
This means that a group of people that don't want to pay their assessment eventually can withhold that money and then eventually come back and bring up an issue on changing the bylaws so that they don't have to belong to the association any longer and dissolve the association. And I don't think that individuals that are not paying their dues should be allowed to
make
decisions. I mean, that means that they could make all kinds of decisions for the ranch.
And the two or three or four or five have never made a difference and won't make a difference.
Well, but that doesn't mean it's not the 25 or 30 or 40 or 50 votes that do make a difference.
Yes, that's okay.
Hi.
Sure. Not me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So did you get 9 and 10? Are they out?
Yes, they're out. But they do a lot of
things.
And I
mean,
a lot of
things.
Okay.
And that's going to probably be similar to 8 in the garden cabin, huh?
Probably.
And this is the
group?
Scott Smith group.
Oh.
Yeah.
The number 2
was
perfect. It was all
good. I want Larry to come back. Where I can go. I had no, you know, I did know that that lock hadn't been changed, but that was last year.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think anything of it, but you're right.
Well, I remember a comment
time
from Brent Fulmer about
fixing it,
changing something there. Maybe it just didn't work at all. Now it works, but it's still this goofy lock.
I don't know.
Maybe it should change.
Didn't your wife have a problem with that? She got locked in, or somebody?
He couldn't get out.
There was something in your family.
I remember you were complaining because the doorknob wouldn't let me out.
But I got out. That's just it's awkward. It's always hard to know whether it's in or whether it's out, and it does not work smoothly. It's worn out. Number one,
it doesn't fit the hole.
Yeah, it's worn out. Number one, it's wrong kind. Number two.
All right, we're big issue number page 13, voting rights.
Okay. I can understand your thought that's you know something right, but
you buy into the ranch.
Yeah, if I belong to a club and it's not my this vote to me isn't the same as my vote as an American to protect my rights and privileges.
I think that's it.
My right to life as an American citizen. This is a vote to protect my investment or my entertainment and my enjoyment out here. If I don't pay for that,
I pay $25,000 for it. I paid $30,000, or I paid $50,000. and I want that to happen. If I'm late on my dues, or if I skip a year, take some other kind of action. That is, you can leave it in, but it may destroy the approval of the whole program. I think people thought they have a very serious interest in looking out for their investment, a lot of other things, and it goes way beyond a volunteer elected committee of board members that say, I can't. I think you've changed this. In the old one, not only could I not vote, but then the board could say, and we won't let you vote or do anything for the next 60 days because you were naughty. We want to say, we want to do whatever you call it, but we won't allow you to do anything for 60 days because we want to teach you a lesson. Let's grow up and not think in terms of whether we're teaching somebody a lesson or not.
Okay, so that's one we need to come back to.
That's a very serious one.
The next one is the assignment of rights and obligations.
And I have an okay on that.
Okay. And then I think from there on out, everything is the same in all the documents, essentially.
Okay.
Maybe business and commercial activity may be different.
Statement of accounts. I have an okay on the 20. I have an okay on 21, except I say, why does DSI really need to know? This is payment of encumbrance. An encumbrancer holding a lien on a lot may pay any unpaid assessments due with respect to the lot. I think this has to do with the mortgage company.
Right. Thank you.
Got it. And again, why do we need to...
I think that's a state law issue. That was my read is...
That could be with that squiggly thing.
Yeah, that's...
By such payment, the encumbrancer has a lien on the lot.
Or the amount paid. So if the mortgage company comes in and makes your pays your assessments, then they get the lien.
Then they pay. They have a lien against the lot.
Right. And I think that's in there simply to comply with state law.
Okay. Let's see where that comes from.
We're on 22, mortgage protection. And again, I think this is a state law issue.
I said it was unnecessary in both places.
Unless it's required by state law.
Yes.
So.
I questioned the not enforcement any provision herein shall defeat or render invalid the rights of the beneficiary under any recorded first deed of trust.
Thank you.
So I think that's probably legal and okay as it was.
Okay.
Did we skip on 21 or what?
We did it.
Oh, and it was?
Okay.
21's okay.
So we're down to plan review, number 23, on page 16.
I have okay on the first paragraph and no on the second paragraph.
That all construction and other improvements must comply with the state and Kane County building and zoning requirements. So you don't think we have some responsibility to help the county enforce the building codes?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why.
I think that's their guideline, and whatever their guideline is, and whatever they want to do happen, you know, I think that they're big boys, and they have systems throughout the county. We have no responsibility in other residential areas and things
to have to enforce it.
To title, or to try and enforce it. or to do anything. That's up to them and their system.
And they're going to the building inspectors to have this done, and we don't have liability whether or not the house falls down. That's theirs.
We have said that they do need to get a building permit and comply with the codes. Amen.
We've got that somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is here.
Well, that's the first part, basically. All construction plans, including the plot site plan, must be approved by the board of directors. After the board has approved the plans, the owner must still obtain a building permit from King County Building Inspector and notify the association when the permit is issued.
They run it by us.
I wouldn't mind that next one. All construction and other improvements must comply with Utah State and King County building and zoning requirements.
I think you don't like the last sentence.
I just, yeah, to
and
say...
And it's incumbent upon the board to facilitate enforcement of such legal requirements.
Well, I guess it's a question of what we mean by facilitate in this case, because it would seem to me that if the county came to the association and said, we need your help getting access to this site, we need to know, we need information, we need, would we stonewall and say, no, we're not going to, that's your problem, you take care of it however you...
That's not how it reads to me, though.
Yeah, I read it more saying that it's our obligation,
mm-hmm.
and if we're not, policing it, we're going to be held.
But it doesn't say to me that you wouldn't be willing to facilitate
sure.
a gate being opened to allow them to do what their business is. But that's their business.
We've always been helpful. Well, I just struck the second paragraph and left the first paragraph.
I like the second paragraph except for the last statement. All construction and other improvements must comply with, or is it redundant? You don't need
Can
it.
Can we just say that?
That's, yeah, it is kind of
redundant.
And they have to get a building permit and a building inspector. That
I agree.
Okay, we'll take that paragraph out. Second paragraph is gone. Okay. Liability insurance language is the same in both, so I'm assuming we're okay with that.
Good, same. I had okay.
Mm-hmm. 25, the business or commercial activity, that is different. What's the sense on that one?
What will resist it? I would like number 25 totally off. Let me tell you why. We're all teed up about Dan Ordolani and whether he can do something with his home. We've talked about for years on one of these lots up here doing a Christmas tree farm. Nobody wants to work that hard, but maybe somebody would want to do a tree farm, a nursery, green things up. That could be termed a commercial venture. The fish farms could be a commercial venture. I put down Lee Makes Signs. I don't know if that's Lee Beller or who. The time I read this, I said Lee Makes Signs. Does that mean that's a commercial venture that we should rule out? Occupants without external evidence thereof, including the bottom of the sentence there, without limitations, traffic generations, which are merely incidental to the use of the dwelling unit as a residential home, and for so long as such occupation are conducted in conformance with all applicable government ordinances, shall be permitted. So again, here we are splitting hairs. I know in town you can have a beauty shop or something, I think up to one employee. I used to know, but I haven't paid much attention. But a home business is allowed in most residential neighborhoods as long as it doesn't create a traffic problem or a parking problem. And they, in town, have, seem like they can have one employee, but they can't have more than that.
There's different regulations whether you actually manufacture on site or if you ship to and from that site.
Yeah.
Explain, I'm a little vague on this. I see business or commercial activity that Lee Beller would like to put up a store up here. If I take that out, that means he can. Does that mean Dan Ortolani is okay for renting his place up there for a commercial business. If we take it out, will that have a problem? I don't understand this.
Yeah. Candace, on the long run, economy is the thing that dictates. We can have all kinds of rules and regulations and zoning and crap, and it's an artificial way for people who probably own nothing and have no responsibilities to tell others. But the bottom, the truth of the matter is, if Lee Beller, let's say we take, hey, put in whatever you want. You put in a grocery store or a Walmart, you go broke. I mean, the economy is the thing that really dictates these. John Pardo has talked for 10 years about having a service station or something up here on top. Not a chance in the world that it would survive, you know. So to get real on some of these things, it's the dollars and cents.
Yeah.
That makes them
but Dale, notice...
paying for the Vermillion Cliffs Lodge in one way or another. They're hauling 1,000 gallons of water a week out of our system.
Wonderful. What's 1,000 gallons? 10 cents?
Okay, but the... Dale, I'm a little confused as to what your concern is here, because this doesn't prohibit any commercial activity.
1,000 gallons is not a lot, but that's about $15 worth of diesel fuel.
What it does do is say it gives the board some control over that commercial activity. It says that you can't do those things without the prior written approval of the board. So it gives us, as the board, the authority and the capacity to say we don't think that it's appropriate for Ortolani to have that commercial activity in that location. Or we don't think it's appropriate for John Pardo to build that service station on his lot. Okay, given under the circumstances right now. But if we do think it's appropriate, if there's a case to be made, we can approve it. In some ways, it says, all it really says is that if you're going to engage in commercial activity, work with us, talk to us, convince us that it's the best thing to do at this time and in this way, and it gives us then, it does give us the capacity to assess an impact fee for commercial activity. So if we think your commercial activity is going to increase the traffic on this particular stretch of road, and we're going to have to put more money into maintaining it, we expect you to pay some of the fees for doing that. So I don't see it as prohibiting anything, what it does do is require that you work with the board and pay the full, potentially pay the full cost of the impact on the ranch.
And I look at it in terms of, so it didn't occur before, the economy wouldn't allow it, but if we're knowing that lots are selling for $40,000, $80,000, $100,000, you're going to increase numbers of people, values that people may be able to have an economy that would support a gas station or another store. So I think if from what I'm hearing now, if we're looking not just for today or tomorrow, but we're looking in the future for 20 years, I think that the ranch needs to be protected in those circumstances. If the traffic flow increases, then who's going to put up all the money to have that repaired and keep it functional? If we're not talking about today or tomorrow, but we're talking about 20 years with this kind of program, and it's not limiting, it's just in coordination with the board.
North Lawn is a small operation. You know, if that goes on, then what's to say that person can't put in a 30 room or a 100 room lot of something? All of a sudden, that changes the whole picture. Now, any of these 20-acre lots would certainly support this 20-room or even 100-room lot, you know. And all of a sudden, that would really impact the ranch.
And I'm not sure it's a bad idea to do that.
But the ranch should be involved in it.
But we should be involved in
that's the key.
In the planning of it, okay? Because it's going to affect everybody.
And that's what, Ken, I agree 100%, and that's why I would like to see us do more on an overall plan, you know, to look at some of these things and decide where we really should be going rather than blocking some of them. And there's,
so all we're asking here is right now, we bring this by the ranch. I'm not saying that it can't be done. We're just saying that
let's bring it up to the membership to see if it really is going to impact the ranch. The whole membership should have some voice in it.
And the board has the power to, or the authority to, impose an impact fee or assess an impact fee according to whatever the impact is on the association.
You know, if it's going to be a major drain on the water supply, if it's going to be, you know, a major traffic creator on a section that needs more road maintenance, we ought to be able to say, you know, help us out with this. So.
Yeah.
With the understanding of where this is coming from now, and looking to the future, I can see where this is something that shouldn't be limiting, but inclusive of the board knowledge, rather than individual planning, but not against an individual doing things in the future.
No.
So did we convince you?
Still probably not, and okay. I guess, Larry, one of the things that I'm personally very sensitive to right now, I have seen some ridiculous decisions come out of the board, so I'm apprehensive
okay.
of the board and some of their, the mischief that the board has participated in makes me a little cautious or suspicious of what they may do, and so in looking at the whole thing, I've tried to restrict their dictatorial power, not at all to restrict the conversation and the consideration and the evaluation that could go, but I've just seen some things that are very unacceptable, especially on a long-range base. We've done some very foolish things, and I guess we as members allowed it to happen, but it did happen, and so I feel pretty cautious about trusting the board to make some of the decisions that have to do with whether you paint your door green or red or white. And so when we saw those kind of things, the board in power at that time wanted to exercise those kinds of controls. Somebody had a screen. And this is here. I'd like to put the mark on it that I have on some of these others to carefully reread it and see
okay.
if this can be acceptable with a little tweaking on one of it. That was my only thing is to get us into a judgment policing position and putting our nose someplace where we really don't have the right. For instance, some have been very strong to say the DSROA board should have full control of the DSROA assets, the DSROA land. So whatever happens on the 2,000 acres, no question, the DSROA board should do that. Now, when it gets over into Slide Canyon or over in Crawford on Joe Blow's property, does the board have any right to tell them what they could do or how they could do it? True, there's a little overlap on as Ken mentioned, 1,000 gallons of water. In the overall scheme of things, 1,000 gallons of water is really nothing. Even I'm using, 30 years of experience on road maintenance. And some of these things that I hope we get above so that we're not, and I, you know, I don't want to pick on Candy because she's so nice, but her thought about wanting to charge or control the well on lot number one, I really think that's wrong. I think that the improvement over there is an improvement, and for us to charge those people 30 cents or $30 or whatever, if they would put $15,000 or $20,000 in to a facility that would allow somebody to use Lot 1. There have been three or four times when the scout group has been over there. We took a horse ride up over the top and ended up there one night. It's so immaterial as far as the overall scope and benefit of the ranch that I'd like to see us doing more for our members than less.
But I don't think that's the question at this point. And me being nice, I had questions. And I'm speaking from other members that have spoken to me as well about that issue. And I, as a board member, am presenting some of the information. And what I'm asking again is present the information to us. Now, wealth of information, all the answers, no. But, you know, well-informed is what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this question here is talking about the future, if there's a way we can tweak it, because you want to build a store, you want to build a store, you want to build a store. I mean, I just think this is, as an association, and there are regulations that an association must follow, and that is through a board, and you present your case, and we'll go from there. If it has to go to commercialization, and it's got to go to the membership to have that acceptance, we are all owners in that, in this system. So if we can't accept it at this point and we got to tweak it or whatever we have to do, I just think it's protective of the future. It's not indicative of thumbs down on everything somebody wants to do, because I, too, want to go forward with it with understanding that there's a big picture to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just protects, again, the members and the ranch. That kind of a statement, that's where I'm coming from in my understanding of it.
And I guess, Dale, I do have a slightly different perspective on how much autonomy lot owners should have and what they do with their property. Because I think there are externalities. I think what people do on their land affects the rest of us. And, you know, if people are storing flammable liquids and non-approved... And, you know, even if I own a lot up on the top of the hill and the people down below me start doing stuff that is really disruptive of the nature of the ranch, where do I go if not to the association?
There is a county zoning ordinance that has a lot more teeth in it than ours. I think, you know, for the last 100 years, a lot of counties and cities and stuff have developed some guidelines, not personalized or specific, but in some cases,
we need that windmill.
Yeah. We put up our windmill here on the ranch. Is that a commercial venture?
Anyway, the last two items here were pretty much the same, so.
If I want to put up a 5-foot tower with a 30-foot wind generator on my lot, I think that affects everybody around me. And it's got to be more than just between me and the county. The responsibility of the association is to protect the membership. And as much as we possibly can. That's the only reason for the association. And so, if we buy a house in an association in a rural area, I mean, in an urban area, that means you have some right to say what happened, what the minimum requirements are, what is considered a nuisance, things like that. That's what we're trying to do. It's not necessarily trying to tell people exactly what they can do or not, but put the limits in. And all that. And it basically just gives you the ability to have people review this with you instead of going to do it.
And it goes back, charge them 30 cents or whatever for the water, which is association land. It just goes back to, are we going to charge the people for gravel? It's a commodity, it's something that's used, that belongs to the ranch. And if we have to function as a ranch, that's my basis of where I'm coming from. How do you differentiate water from gravel? I mean, to me, they're the same thing. They're a product of the ranch, and how are we as the ranch going to survive and continue?
So it looks to me like the points that still need to be talked through to see if we can reach any agreement are the issue of the easement,
yeah,
and easement approval, the voting rights issue, and this business and commercial activity paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
So those three require discussion, and I don't know how you want to proceed with that, but you want to try to do that now, or you want to wait until we've got more people here?
Well, is there going to be any resolution? I mean, is there anything else that can be brought that's going to change anybody's mind, number one? Number two, if not, maybe we should have the other three board members here on those three issues and have something. Something's more workable now, right, in terms of completion.
Offer choices to the membership on those three items. So this is what we recommend, and these are areas that the board thinks the membership needs to make decisions on.
I don't know, and I agree with you, but I kind of wish that we had a few more of the board members,
yeah,
and then have a some type of a format that's presented to them as a whole.
You only have about one more month,
yeah,
before you have to have everything ready to